I have wrestled with what to do with the next 8 minutes. And I think I will digress for one moment to share with you that it was destined in the annals, in the history of the Almighty God, that Jerry Strader should be a navigator. And the way that you will know that is tied to early experiences in the church. And I had a Sunday school teacher, a Mrs. Mara. And one of the things that she wanted her students to do week by week is quote the memory verse. So on a given Sunday, probably 4, 5, 6 years of age, she asked if there was anyone who knew their memory verse. And only one hand went up. So she brought me up in front of the class and told everybody else how smart I was and asked me to quote my memory verse. And I did. Now the thing you should know before we get to that is that I had a drinking uncle named Elsie. And Elsie put money in my piggy bank when I quoted a verse for him. And at the age of 4 or 5 or 6, one verse is as good as another. So, with Miss Mara's help, standing on top of the table, I quoted my memory verse. I'm a little Dutch boy. I drink beer. Makes my tummy stick way out. Miss Mara's smile, the radiance of her face, her countenance fell. I was removed from my platform. And between Sunday school and church, you have that brief 3, 4, 5 minutes. We didn't stay for church that day. Mother took me home. And if you ever saw anybody hide somebody under a bushel basket, I was it. You have a sense of humor. I appreciate that. What I'd like to share with you in the few minutes we have is standing on the promises. I was born in Gainesville, which is not that far from Wichita Falls, and went to Sunday school and church on Sunday, probably 3 Sundays out of 4, if Mom and Dad weren't going to the farm to work cattle, mend fence, pick up pecans, fish, the various other things that were very much a part of my life growing up. And a lot of things in between that we'll skip there. I played a little high school ball, belonged to a high school organization or two, and went to North Texas State, where after 4 years, they awarded a 4-year degree, I think more to get rid of me than because I had earned anything. Then to Fort Worth and to work for a Burroughs Corporation in the sales field. And as most young men, 20-some-odd years of age, I met Christ somewhere in the neighborhood of 10, 11, 12. I'm not sure what the date was, and I have not bothered to go back and check church records to find out. But we had a week of special services, which most of you would know as a revival. And during that time, the visiting speaker asks every of those present who would like to have him pray for them. I felt a need in my heart, and during the following week, discussed it with Mom and my aunt, and the thing I remember out of those conversations is that the decision was all mine. What the decision was, I'm still not sure, but the fact it was all mine was very clear. So the following week, happened to be a communion Sunday, when the time came for an invitation in a Baptist church, I walked an aisle. And that night I was baptized, and now I was a member of the church, but if you'd asked me whether or not I was a Christian or not, I'd had to tell you I don't know, because I really didn't. That really never was covered. So through young life, a Christian approach to non-Christian high schoolers, and a guy named Bob Thiem, who has pastor of the large church in Houston area, Baraka, one night at a camp, on the way back after he had covered the gospel. I told God that I didn't know what had happened before, but if I'd never before put all my eggs in Christ's basket, if I'd never before received Jesus Christ, then to the best of my ability, I wanted to do that. I was probably a little disappointed because there weren't any bolts of lightning, no claps of thunder, no bells, no angelic voices. I was walking along the path before I made that commitment, and I was still walking along the path after I made that commitment. But there began to be differences in my life after that in relationship to such common things as dusting around the house. Not a very masculine, hero, macho type, but needed to be done in our house, and Mom had chosen me to help. And God was able to change my attitude toward it, because prior to that, it was one of those things I probably liked least, disliked most. And in response to the Word of God, I'd read it because I was told to read it, but it really didn't make much sense. And once I became at least passingly, initially acquainted with the author of the book, it began to make sense. And having said that, most of you are not taking notes. If you will, take notes. Let me give you this, and if we don't get it all through, then we'll quit. Hello, Lee. I hadn't seen you back there. The first one involves marriage. And the verse is Ephesians 6, 6. Marriage, Ephesians 6, 6. The second one is no children. And the verse on that is Isaiah 58, 10, 11, and 12, which if you're not familiar with, you will be after the study in the morning. That's what we're studying for a Bible study. And the third, I simply entitled Glen Eyrie, but it involved a shift from the business world into service with the Navigators. And the verse on that is Exodus 23:20. Am I going too fast? Everybody with me? Okay. And then from Glen Eyrie, that was a short stay, only 3 months, to Fresno. And the verse on that was Deuteronomy 1, 6 through 8. Then adoption. And that was Leviticus 19:34. And then the last involves a running battle with malignancy of the lymph gland system, which my wife has experienced for the last 21, going on 22 years, and 4 recurrences and surgery and radiology and radiation, and chemotherapy and some other things there. And that's Psalm 63, 1 through 3. So with that kind of an outline, we'll go back and see what we can put on that quickly. My wife went to school at the University of Oklahoma and had the privilege of sitting under the pastorship of E.F. Halleck, Preacher Halleck, who may be one of the most godly men that I know or know of in our generation, somebody that I've met personally. He tried to teach the kids in the BSU, of which he was a member, to govern their lives, direct their lives on the promises of God. And he even took it down so far as looking for a promise for a parking place. That was not the method by which God had directed yours truly up to that point in time. And Marquita and I had probably dated for 9 months to a year. And I had already told God that I was through looking, that this was my choice. But he hadn't told me what his choice was yet. And so we went through that. And finally there came a particular Sunday morning. And there are times, particularly when sweet young things are involved with red-blooded American males, when there are times when you say, I want what you want, God. And there are other times when that's what you say, but what you mean is, I want her to be mine now. So we'd been through that on this particular morning. And I'd been over it again with God, and I said, God, if you want her married to somebody else, then that's what I want with all my heart. If you want me married to somebody else, that's what I want with all my heart. If you want neither one of us married, then that's what I want with all my heart. And if in your grace you could see fit to let us spend the next 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years together, I sure would be pleased. And I had peace about it. If you haven't been through that, then you don't know what I'm talking about. If you have been through it, you know all too well what I'm talking about. Why don't we leave the choice to Him? So from Ephesians 6, particularly 5 and 6, it's a rundown passage-wise where he's talking to children and what they should do and fathers and what they should do and servants and what they should do and masters and what they should do. And at the tail end of that verse, wrestling with it, out of a pastor's message, he quit, I continued on, came the phrase, doing the will of God from the heart. Not with eye service as men pleasers in the first part of the verse, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Had lunch with Tom Carroll, who was NAV rep there at the time. Checked out with Tom. And so in my not having a promise, God had given me a promise, which says it's okay to do the will of God from the heart. Second one, no children. 3 years, end of the service, March of 55 to 57. And did not understand why. But while we were in the service and had access to some free, not sure it is when you're in the service, but to some free medical service, which we did not have access to otherwise, we did some sperm counts and some tests and found out that the pistol wasn't loaded. There was no sperm count. The reason for that was tied to a hernia operation I had when I was 6 months old. And in sewing up the hernia, the doctor had also picked up the vas deferens. Those of you who have had a vasectomy or have heard of it, that's the thing that they remove. And it was down there in three or four little short pieces. I had one undescended testicle, which was up there, and if I sat on the john and put enough pressure on the stomach, it would pop around down there, but, you know, no big problem. But it was not in the scrotum. It was not descended. Therefore, while I was in the service, they checked it out and removed it, and those sort of things, which are abnormal, are the things where malignancies occur when and if they did. Very touching thing, involved in the ministry. Guys you don't know, Percy Cresselius and Roland DeLapp and some other guys, Gary Fuller, came out of those years. But a chaplain with whom we were co-laboring on the base, and we had an opportunity with outdoor meetings on the base. I've never heard of it before since. And we counseled with over 100 men of night, at least 4 weeks in a row. Just a moving of God at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, you know, and I happened to be a part of it. It was a blessing. But this chaplain, at 45-some years of age, says straight, says, I would be willing to give you one of my vas deferens, which meant major surgery for him, and for me. And it touched my heart. It did then, it does now. It wasn't the thing to do, and we didn't do that. So we came from there to Glen Eyrie, back to work, out of the service, and back to work for Burroughs. And in Exodus 23:20, almost Exodus 20:20, you know, is the, or Exodus 20, is the Ten Commandments. How in the world can God give you a promise from God out of the Ten Commandments? Same way he can give you one from anywhere else. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way and to bring you into the place which I have prepared for thee. And it goes on in 24, chapter 24, verse 3 and verse 7. Same idea. But Skip Gray, some of you are acquainted with him, was in Dallas at the time. Seifert was still out in Fresno. And Skip came home one night from the Glen. He was running summer conferences and leading the singing and what have you. And so he came blowing in, and he says, there are three people that are sitting in this room tonight who are going to be on their way to Glen Eyrie next week or in the next 10 days or something. Maybe he said two people. I knew who that was. That's Noel Nelson and Jim White. And afterwards he says, "Straight, will you stick around a minute? I'd like to talk to you." And so the gist of our conversation was that leadership would like for Marquita and I to consider coming to the Glen for the summer training program. Well, that was a bolt out of the blue, so, you know, prayed. And that's where the verse came, and God says, go. 3 months, I think we were there 12 weeks, and I believe that we moved 15 times in 12 weeks. Into the black house and the pink house and the up house and the down house and the outhouse, you know. Then we came to adoption. No. Then we came to Fresno. I'm jumping the gun there. I'm sorry. After 3 months at Glen Eyrie. And Deuteronomy 1, 6 through 8. Didn't get that one written out. We'll flip over and look at that. No. Yeah, better do that. And being at Glen Eyrie, this was rather appropriate, I thought. And all of these things did not come on the lucky dip method, you know, the Ouija board. Hold the Bible, you know, and let it see where it'll fly open and then put your finger down on a spot. It came as a result of where I was reading, regular devotions. It didn't all come the first day or the second day or the third day or the first week or the first month. But they came. Just in the process of reading through the Word. And God says, hey, you can take that one home with you. So, in verse 6, the Lord our God spake unto us in Horeb. I wasn't in Horeb, I was at Glen Eyrie. He said, you dwelt long enough in this mountain. That's clear enough, isn't it? Okay. Turn you and take your journey and go to the mount. We really went to a valley. I don't know how that happened, but anyway, there are mountains close by. And so we went from there. And verse 8, behold, I've set the land before you. Go in and possess the land, which the Lord our God... I'm sorry, which the Lord sware unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give unto them and to their seed forever after. And you and I both know that these were promises made to the Jewish people as a whole. But God can use them to direct your life. And he did. While in the valley, we learned some things that we probably could not have learned any other way. And the next thing was adoption. And that's Leviticus. Seems like a lot of these are coming out of the Old Testament there. Leviticus 19, 34. Can't be 19:34. See, that's the only one I didn't review, didn't write out. See if I wrote it down wrong. Maybe it can be. Maybe I was wrong. Yeah. Adoption. Children are a great responsibility. And the promise in 19:34, but the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. And thou shalt love him as thyself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So we accepted the responsibility for a young man who's now 25 years old. And in jest somewhat, we called him Ricochet because he sort of caromed off the wall and off the floor and off the furniture and off the ceiling and so on. He's a very active young man. Was and still is. He's 25 today. And then following that, in 1963, we found that Marquita had the Hodgkin's, and the first prognosis was that she might be around 6 weeks to 6 months. As I say, that's 20, 21 years ago. And I'm grateful to God for his grace. And it is that. But as I walked, she was here. We'd been back to the Glen for the burning of the note in 1963. We purchased the Glen in 1953, and 10 years later we burned the note. John and everybody was there. And she went from there to Marietta, to Oklahoma, to visit with her folks. And I went back to Fresno because it was a couple of weeks before my brother got married, and I didn't feel like I ought to be gone from the area that long. So I went back and went to the... Her mother was a nurse and had been a nurse to a country GP, general practitioner, doctor. He examined the nodes, picked up the phone, called a guy in Ardmore, and the next day they did a biopsy. minor surgery, and that's when we got the prognosis that it was malignant and that the time was very short. So as I walked the streets and prayed, Greg was 59 to 63, about 4 years old. As I say, a very active young man. And the responsibility of raising him without my sweetheart. I walked a lot, prayed a lot. And one of the verses that the Lord sealed in my heart was the Psalm 63, 1 through 3. O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. My flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. To see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. And then the phrase that the Lord pulled out and sealed in my heart. Because thy loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. And the key to finances, to men, to a ministry, to a house, to a reputation, to your husband, wife, mom and dad, children, is to hold them with an open hand. And I was able to pray again. God, she's yours. And she means far more to you than she does to me. And if you want to take her home to be with you, that's what I want with all my heart. If you see fit to spare her life, I would pray to that end. I think you're capable of doing that. But if you want her home to be with you, then I don't want her down here with me. And God sealed it to my heart. And there's a sense in which you know the rest of the story. We've been involved in recent years in surviving. Her father went home with malignancy in 1980. She had major surgery in 79. Her spleen was removed and then followed 3 months of radiation and 9 months of chemotherapy. And that's bad news any way you slice it. But God's grace was sufficient, is sufficient, will be sufficient to our every need. So promotions, demotions, prosperity, something less than that, God is still sufficient. And I trust that you are learning, will learn, have learned, and will learn to stand on the promises of God.